And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, welcome to a Monday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Matty Klab with you here on a Monday. And Bills back on the practice field, which we'll get to in just a second. Plenty to get to, actually, today with some roster moves, some cuts, stuff like that. We'll get to all of that in short order. Had an interesting thing happen, Matty. Last night, we just got back from dropping my daughter off at college in New York, and we just flipped on the TV as we're just kind of vegging out, ready to go to bed. My wife's got the MTV Video Music Awards on.
Mm-hmm.
In my younger days, this was a cool thing that I would watch because I would invariably know 95 to 98% of the artists. And we're sitting there watching it, and my wife says to me, "I don't know whether I should feel like I'm 6 or 60 because of the lack of what I know is going on here. What the hell is going on here?" And I'm just like, "No, nope, it's not you." I said, "We're all in the same boat right now." Because unless you are somewhere between 12 and maybe, I don't know, 28, 30, you're going to be lost. Mm-hmm. Like, the stuff just keeps moving. I don't know.
I can't keep up.
It might as well have been in Swahili. I would not have. Like, I'm watching this, and I mean, I know who Nicki Minaj is and, like, people like that, and I've heard of Bad Bunny and, you know, but it's
You're
like,
out of practice, Brownie.
People are flying on stage, and I'm like, who is that? Here are the nominees. Don't know that one. Don't know that person. Don't know. Oh, I heard that song. Didn't know it was that person. And it was just like, holy cow. It changes so fast in the music industry. I feel like a senior citizen. It was terrible.
I sometimes feel old when it comes to music by now. The stuff that I listened to when I was in college is not what is being played.
Man.
It's not cool anymore. So I kind of get that. But I try to stay up with things. If you're at the Bills practices, which you
are, right, yeah,
you usually get a nice dose of, okay, here's what's in, here's what's new, here's some of the artists. But I used to like watching those award shows too.
I'm very thankful that DJ Yes and DJ Milk at times will go old school, because then I feel like, okay, I'm not dead yet. So there are some people that I can still recognize when I hear their music.
Your kids keep you young too.
Well, I'd like to think so. My son is not into music at all, which is the weirdest thing I've ever witnessed in my life, because I was nuts about music as a kid, you know, teenager, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he is not. Like, he's glued to his phone like most kids his age. But he's looking at highlight videos and, you know, animals doing stupid stuff. That's more entertaining for him, watching YouTube things, than he doesn't listen to music. I mean, he's got a playlist, but it's like, it's all over the map. It doesn't make any sense. There is no, like, distinct genre to it at all. It's everywhere. It's like, you know, somebody threw a water balloon up against the wall. That's his playlist. It's just this big splat of stuff. My daughter's way in on music and stuff, and she kind of gravitates towards more of the female artists. She's almost exclusively female artists.
Mm-hmm.
Sia, Lizzo, like all of them. So, okay, great. Like, I know some of those names by osmosis from her talking about it, but holy cats. We felt like we were living on another planet last night. It was unbelievable.
It takes too much time to stay up to date on all of that. That's what I think.
Right, because we're too busy staying up to date on what's going on at One Bills Drive, which today had some, you know, some news concerning the roster. It is now down to 73 players. First, you had the release of Matt Araiza over the weekend, which, you know, I think a lot of Bills fans, at least by the reaction we got on social media, were glad to see that step taken by the organization. And, you know, I know you were here over the weekend, when I was moving someone into college dorms at the press conference. I listened back to it this morning, and, you know, it just the sound of it was the Bills did the best they could do with the information that they had. And I thought Brandon Bean made it clear that the one thing they didn't want to do was rush to judgment. And I think for the general public, they see all the allegations. And I think in this day and age of social media, it's guilty until proven innocent in the public, you know, the court of public perception. And I understand why. These are serious, serious charges or allegations. And then on the flip side of it, you want to, as they said, not rush to judgment and just say, we're not even going to hear the guy out by. So they tried to hear him out. But it sounded like the disconnect was being unable to get all the information they were hoping they could get their hands on.
Yeah, that's what they had explained. You know, there was contact on both ends, on the Bills' end of things and on Jane Doe's end of things, yeah. Her attorney. So they said that they were piecing everything together as much as they could in the limited amount of time that they had when they were made aware of everything in July. And then a civil suit was filed on last Thursday, and that's when things really started to get moving. I know Brandon and Sean said there were a couple long nights leading up to the release trying to figure out and you know, talk to legal.
Well, and new information came to light by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Sean
said, you know, I've learned things over the last 24 hours after he spoke after Friday night's game.
Yep.
So he addressed it then, and then we heard from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott on Saturday night. A long day, you know, practice starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We were supposed to hear from Sean McDermott before practice, and then it ended up being after practice. So practice ended.
Matt Araiza wasn't out there.
Matt Araiza was not at practice. We were told to sit tight for a while and that Sean would be made available at some point. So about 2 hours after practice, we started to hear the rumblings. Okay, Sean's going to talk. So we head back into the field house and discover that Brandon was also going to address the media. So got to hear from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean Saturday right before 8 o'clock when they announced that they had released Matt Araiza. So it was a long night for everybody. I know Sean and Brandon had a few long nights in a row trying to figure out what's the best move, what's the best thing to do here. And I ultimately think that was the best decision. And from my point of view, the only decision that you can make.
Right.
I thought it was good on them to release Matt. Their allegations, yes, but those allegations were some pretty serious and detailed allegations. And I think when you have something like that out there in the open, it's tough to hang on to somebody like that, especially when you're moving on with an NFL season. That is a big distraction to have in your locker room. That is something that is looming. That is something that is 100% not sorted out, not figured out. So I'm glad that he is not a part of the Bills anymore.
Right. So, I mean, you think about the team distraction, number one, the personal distraction for him with that looming, this case is looming. Who's to say he could even perform effectively if for some reason you decided to keep him? You know, I thought Brandon mentioned that when he said, you know, he's got to go just take care of this now because this is potentially life-changing for him in a bad way. And you know, if he's found guilty of charges, whether it's civil or whether criminal charges soon follow, yeah, I mean, it's life-changing. So go focus on that because being a professional athlete, it's pretty secondary right now with the charges that guy's, well, the civil suit he's facing. There are no criminal charges as of yet. A criminal investigation is ongoing at this point in time. Some of the players in the locker room today after practice were asked, you know, how are you dealing with this in the aftermath? And we heard Deion Dawkins in the locker room actually say, already done. He's not here anymore. We've moved on. We're on to the next thing. So, you know, the aim of the team by releasing him to remove him as a distraction seems to have already achieved its aim, which is to allow the team to not have that as this lingering thing over here on the side. It's gone now. And so now they can just kind of focus on getting ready for the regular season opener.
Yeah, I think with the game, you know, we open the season and against the Rams. The clock is ticking. The days are moving by fast. You have to move on fast. But I will say Saturday, it was a weird day. And I don't know if that's just because, you know, from my standpoint of view, everything that went down on Friday night, what Sean had said, waiting for the coaches to talk on Saturday after practice, there wasn't that energy at practice. It was more down.
Somber.
I guess is somber. Yeah, that's the right way to explain it. But it felt like a different practice. And you could tell that players were affected by this. How much, I don't know. We didn't get to talk to the team on Saturday at all or individual players at all. We got to talk to them today after practice. But at this point, they're moving on because they're getting ready for the Rams. But that's a tough thing to have inside of your locker room, especially when the culture, the character of the locker room of this team, of Sean and Brandon, is set to such a high standard. It's different with different teams. Different teams handle things differently. Knowing the type of culture, the type of character that they want inside of that locker room. Allegations, yes, but that does not fit inside of the Buffalo Bills locker room.
It doesn't fit.
The picture that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have painted of what they want on their team. So to have something like that as a stain of your team, you know, it doesn't look good on anybody. So that's why I think releasing Matt Araiza, they felt like was what they needed to do at that point.
Yeah. And by releasing him, the roster went down to 79 players. Six more players were released today. And you had two offensive linemen in Tanner Owen and Jacob Capra who were released. Wide receiver Neil Pau was also released, one of the receivers on the roster. Safety Josh Thomas, who had been here for the last couple of years on the practice squad as a safety, cornerback Jordan Miller, and defensive end Daniel Joseph. So the roster is now at 73. They have to get 20 more spots moved off the roster by 4 p.m. tomorrow. That's when rosters have to be down to 53. I don't think any of these were terribly surprising cuts in any way, shape, or form. 20 more to go, and obviously there is a punter role that has to be filled, so there will be an ad at some point in time, and Punter Watch 2022 is on already.
Here we go.
And some of you might be saying, well, how come they haven't signed a punter already? They worked out some punters over the weekend, we know that, and then there's no reason to rush right now. Yes, you've got a regular season game in about 9 or 10 days, and you probably want to get the hold operation down for kicker Tyler Bass, so he's comfortable going into the opener, and a punter is going to be the guy that's doing that. But at the same time, you're going to be having upwards of a half a dozen punters flooding the market when every team makes final cuts. Two veteran punters have already been released by their respective teams, or are about to anyway. The Tennessee Titans told their longtime punter Brett Kern that they are releasing him. Kern has punted for them since 2009, but they had a rookie in there, Ryan Stonehouse, Colorado State. Mm-hmm. He's on a rookie contract. He's a lot more affordable. And when you have a guy, a young player with upside and a veteran that costs a lot of money, if they're comparable, you're keeping the young guy to save money. And that's what the Titans are doing. Kern is a Grand Island, New York native, so he's from just up the way. He's 36 years old. But he did have a net punting average of 41.2 last season. He's got three Pro Bowls on his resume, the last coming in 2019, in which he was also named a first-team All-Pro. Guy can still get it done, so it'll be interesting to see if he is a consideration. I would imagine he is. And then Broncos punter Sam Martin, also released, Maddie, by also going to be released by Denver, according to reports. He apparently refused to take a pay cut after signing a big contract with them a year or two ago. Top five punter statistically mm-hmm. last year. Now, we should take that with a grain of salt because punting in the thin air of Denver, your numbers are usually a little bit bigger. But still, good punter, quality player, 32 years of age. I don't know how you feel about it, Maddie, but I'm of the opinion that they're going to probably sign a veteran punter, someone who's held for a long time in the league as well, because you need that operation to get smooth and working like a well-oiled machine in short order.
Yeah, somebody who can come in, understands what it's like to play in the NFL, what is needed at your position, how to do it, how to work with a kicker. I would think that they would want to target somebody like that. And it seems like those two guys, if they are interested in them, those are good options for the Bills right now. They're proven veterans in the league. Yes, they might have to pay up a little bit more, of course, than they would a rookie or somebody who hasn't been in the NFL as long. But you look at the punter position, too, on this team, knowing what the Bills did last year with Matt Hawk, not saying that Matt Hawk was a bad punter at all, but knowing the weather that they played in and sometimes how that affected Hawk's ability in terms of range to punt the football, yardage situation, sometimes not that pretty because of the rain, because of the wind. It was a tough season for him, but that didn't hurt the Bills a lot or really at all. They were still able to do what they needed to do with field position and
well, having a number one defense kind of helps too when you don't maybe flip the field the way you had hoped to. Their punt coverage unit, I think, was top five also. That helps.
So not saying that they need the creme de la creme of a punter to be able to have a great season. I feel like that's a position that fill it with who you need to fill it with, but you don't need the OBJ of punters to be able to walk in the building here to help this team. They already have a great defense. They have a great offense. Flipping the field is something that is nice, but it's not necessarily a necessity. Sure, in some games it's going to be a necessity depending on how the game is going, but they're going to be in a good position regardless of who is in that punter position.
Yeah, and you would think that if one of these guys is looking for work, they'd be all too happy to come punt for this team. And you know, whether you can get one of those guys for the veteran minimum, I think you could do it with Brett Kern, who's 36 years old and have a chance to play for his hometown team. Maybe not so much for Sam Martin, who probably believes he still has a couple of really quality years left in his leg and believes he should be paid accordingly. I mean, that's the reason he's going to be released by Denver, because he doesn't want to take a pay cut. Well, now he's going to take a really big pay cut because he's not going to have a job, at least for the interim. Then there was this, Maddie. We've heard a lot of speculation concerning Odell Beckham Jr., and his potential landing spot when he is fully recovered from ACL surgery. For those that don't remember, he tore his ACL in the Super Bowl in the middle of February. So he might not be ready until late November or December at the earliest. So we're talking about a guy that might only be available for four or five games in a playoff run at best. We've seen Von Miller actively recruiting him on social media. He's putting him in Bills uniforms and all that stuff. Now Stephon Diggs made the following comment to Complex Sports recently about the idea of adding him to the roster. Diggs said, quote, "I feel like he's a great teammate. I don't live in the world of social media or anything like that, but I feel like he's hands down one of the best players in the league, especially when he's been healthy. He's a great teammate, and it's not just that adding him would be helpful. He's a great player and great person. We have a lot of talent on this offense, but as a team, you're always thinking about adding the right people, and he definitely fits that mold. If he does come, that would be great, but if he doesn't, it's okay. It won't be the end of the world." So it sounded like he was hedging a little bit there at the end after talking him up. But you really wonder behind the scenes what kind of back channel conversations go on between players.
I mean, it is obvious that Von Miller wants him a part of this team. I wonder, in terms of what you said, the back channel conversations, I mean, let's say that this thing happens or pans out. The wide receivers are going to have to share some reps, and it's already tough to get your hands on the football knowing the amount of people that are in that room this year.
Yeah, not to mention you may have to move somebody off the roster to move him on. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, injuries happen every season, and maybe if there are a couple of injuries at the receiver position, you wouldn't have to worry about it. But, yeah, I mean, you're still probably costing somebody a roster spot there at the end of the season if, in fact, he's even ready to come back. And, you know, I think about it, Maddie, you know, you got Tre'Davious White, ACL on Thanksgiving, late November, has surgery the following week, which is practically December, and now here we are at the end of August, so that's 9 full months, and he still hasn't been cleared to practice, and you're left saying, man, OBJ in middle of February, you go 9 months from there, you know, you're in December,
yeah.
Like, or at least late November. So it's, I think it's going to be iffy, not to mention the fact that it's his second ACL. So, yes, he knows what to expect, but I would like to see him closer to actually doing football-related stuff and what his clearance is before anybody, quite frankly, whether it's the Bills or the Rams, gets excited about the potential of him playing. Other Bills notes from today, Jordan Poyer back on the practice field with the red non-contact jersey. Was he out there on Saturday, too?
Yes, he was out there on Saturday, too. So good to see him back out there, kind of getting back into the fold of things. We know that he has that brace on that left arm, kind of protecting that elbow there, but I'm ready to see him back on the field. I know we're still waiting for Tre'Davious White as he continues to rehab, but nice to see somebody who Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott said should be back before week one.
He was actually asked, and we'll have some sound from the locker room after practice today with Jordan Poyer, where he was asked about his prospects for week one, and he did say he expects to be out there. So hopefully that proves to be the case. He gets out of that red non-contact jersey by early next week, and he's good to go. A number of players not practicing today, including tight end O.J. Howard, Tommy Doyle still working back from the foot injury, Greg Manns, the other lineman who had the injury last week, and then Isaiah McKenzie today, Tanner Gentry, who got hurt in the Carolina preseason game and didn't return. I mentioned O.J. Howard. Tim Settle still working his way back from his injury. That's been over a week. And then, obviously, Tre'Davious White not doing anything. Ilyanku wasn't there. And then we saw Quentin Morris leave practice early with an apparent injury. So he may be an addition by tomorrow to the injury list.
It was OJ's second day that he missed practice. He was on the bike on Saturday as well. And then Isaiah McKenzie came off the field during Saturday's practice. Saturday's practice was not a tough or long practice by any means. They went for an hour, no pads or anything like that. So
yeah, day after the game. A lot of the starters obviously didn't play in the preseason game, but still in all, coach wanted to get some work in there. Other NFL news and notes, Brian Robinson, if you haven't heard this story, it's unbelievable, shot multiple times in an apparent robbery, a car robbery, and He went to the hospital, fortunately, with non-life-threatening injuries. Head coach of the Washington Commanders, Brian Robinson, a rookie running back for the Washington Commanders. Ron Rivera, his head coach, went to see him in the hospital, said it was a relief to see Robinson in an upbeat mood after the incident. Had successful surgery, by all accounts, today, and actually posted a view from his hospital bed out the window saying thanks for all the thoughts and prayers. He said he's doing well. So the Commanders are saying that they are not ruling him out to come back and play at some point this season. I'm not going to pretend to know the extent of his injuries from the shooting, but I'd be surprised if he does that. The bullet wounds required surgery, probably to remove some of them, along with, and who knows what organs or what was damaged in the incident. But, man, that's tough.
Yeah, good thing he was all right and was able to, all he needed was surgery. I know that's a lot, but I'm glad that he is somebody who still has an NFL future ahead of him, hopefully. I mean, he's a young kid, went to Alabama.
And he looked like he was going to be the starter on early downs, like the bruising running back, kind of like a Zach Moss. He was going to be kind of their first and second down guy, and then they've got J.D. McKissic and others to handle the passing game out of the backfield, Antonio Gibson, that kind of thing. So, yeah, all our best to him for a speedy recovery. And then the concerns, Maddie, continue to grow in New England about their wayward offense.
Oh, no.
Mac Jones and the entire New England offense has been a disaster throughout most of the preseason. It did not get any better in their final preseason tune-up over the weekend. And whether it's play calling, whether it's protections, it is not looked to be in sync in any way, shape, or form. And it looks like moving the football, unless they are keeping everything they are doing under wraps.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this all ruse?
I don't think so. I genuinely think they're going to be lousy this year. Simple protection schemes up front. Their line just simply is not executing on a consistent basis. It's putting an undue amount of pressure on Mac Jones to make things happen, and the offense cannot run the football. They have capable running backs. There's just no holes for them to run through. It starts up front, as we hear Coach McDermott say all the time, and it is not happening up front for the Patriots right now. It's going to be interesting, to say the least.
I talked to somebody yesterday that said that they thought we were going to lose one of the games to the Patriots this season. I was like, are you reading what's been coming out of camp? Do you know what you're talking about here? Do you really think that's a possibility? Because at this point, I don't think it is.
Yeah, and the whole coordinator thing with Matt Patricia supposedly being the play caller, very limited experience on that side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And for a second-year quarterback, even one that had as successful a rookie season as Mac Jones did last year, that kind of coordinator change, that young in a player's career, especially with a coordinator that's not terribly experienced on the offensive side of the ball, man, I just think there's a confluence of events going on there that's going to be very difficult for that team to overcome and still post victories. So I fully expect them to have a losing record this year. They may even be in the basement of the division.
Yikes.
The Jets may win more games than them, which is saying something. Little note on the Giants. At the Giants press conference today, head coach Brian Daboll, when asked about improving the roster depth, right at the end of his press conference said, Joe's open for business, meaning GM Joe Shane. They have some depth spots to fill, to say the least. There are rumors they may trade a veteran receiver like Darius Slayton. Kenny Golladay would be tough to trade because of the cap hit they would incur by doing that. But word out down there is that they're not happy with Kenny Galladay's lack of effort blocking in the run game. And there was some video evidence of that in the preseason game against the Jets over the weekend. So the rubber is meeting the road down there as far as the media finding players to pick on and criticize. And they're trying to get the head coach to jump on board. He wisely is not doing that, but stuff's going on down there. Let's just say
that. We will see the beginning of a new pipeline this year. It was the Panthers and the Bills for a few years. It's about to be the Bills and the Giants.
Yeah. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know. I don't know where that's going to go for the Giants this season. The Cowboys and Eagles are probably better teams than them on paper, certainly. A lot of people are picking the Eagles to win that division. It could be a growing pains year for the Giants with all that they've got to pull together in that division. But we will see. Stuff we're talking about with you today concerns that final preseason game. The preseason is over. So what did we learn about the Bills ahead of the regular season? What do you feel you know about this team now that maybe you didn't know at the beginning of training camp? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive. Also should tell you, we'll be having players from the locker room that we'll be providing to you when we return. Also, second hour of the show, our good friend Eric Wood will join us after taking in the full preseason himself. We'll get some of his thoughts on what he feels he's learned about this Bills team heading into the regular season. But we will step aside here. Some post-practice sound from the locker room when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glad with you here on a Monday. Steve will be back in tomorrow as he is out on the links, hitting them again. So he'll join us back here in studio tomorrow. We told you that Maddie and I, along with our video team at BuffaloBills.com, got around the locker room after practice today, got in touch with a lot of the players.
Open locker room again this
year. First time
year.
In a long time. I mean, we're talking
weird.
Pre-pandemic 2019, like the last time you're in a locker room interviewing people here on One Bills Drive is crazy.
Just trying to remember where guys' lockers are.
Really weird.
Trying to introduce yourself to players you haven't met yet.
Yeah. I mean, I still have yet to talk one-on-one with Stephon Diggs since he got here. That's how long this pandemic stretched on with regulations and restrictions. But Jordan Poyer, now with 2 days of practice under his belt, wearing the red non-contact jersey again today, We caught up with Jordan Poyer on how things are going and his outlook for the season opener. Here is Jordan.
First of all, I guess just how are you feeling?
I feel good. It feels good to be back on the field with the guys. Feels like it's been forever, but it's finally felt good to be back on the field these last couple days with the guys. I know they've been working hard in the training camp. I've been working hard trying to get back on the field, and like I said, it felt good to be back these last couple days.
Where are you in your recovery? Will you expect to be out there come next Thursday?
I expect to be out there. As long as there's no setbacks, it feels really good right now. Continue to work every single day to try to get it to 100% for the first game. Like I said, it felt good to be back out there these last couple days with the guys again and running around playing football.
How scary was it when the injury happened?
It was pretty scary. Really wasn't sure until I got the MRI results of what it was. Just kind of nervous all the way up until then, just hoping that it wasn't too serious. But just got the MRI results and saw that I was going to be able to recover from it, and that's what I was excited about. So just been in the rehab process, Denny and I and Nate, and just been hitting it pretty good, trying to get it back to 100.
It's a little while before the first game. Is that good for you? It gives you a little more practice time and a little more time to get yourself ready?
Yeah, for sure. I think we got a week and a half or so. Like I said, I feel good right now, feel in shape. I feel like I haven't missed a beat, since missing some training camp. But definitely good to get back early and get my feet back on the ground, playing football with the guys again, communicating with them again. So that's been fun.
Jordan, any movement on the extension talk front?
I'm going to leave that up to them upstairs.
Yeah. Is it all frustrating to you? Taken this long to do anything?
I'm a ball player, and that's what I do, and that's where my business is. I'm gonna leave the rest up to them to figure out, and my team to figure out.
I know the last time we chatted, you were relatively optimistic that something would have done
just to feel similarly. Like I said, I'm just here. I want to continue to play football and continue to play my best football here in Buffalo, for as long as I can, however long that may be. But like I said, I'm here with the guys right now, ready to attack this season.
What did you see on this?
Man, a lot of them got just some dog in them, man. Extremely proud of a lot of them. The younger guys, like Jamarcus Ingram, man, learning a couple of positions as Nick McCloud. I mean, you go up go down the list, obviously Kyrie and Christian, guys that have, well-known guys coming into the draft. But like I said, those guys that, maybe some guys haven't heard about, like Jamarcus and Nick, even Cam, I can go down the list of guys. I know we let some guys go today, and we'll probably continue to, which is always a hard part of the year. But, Josh Thomas, he's a great dude and a really good player. And so, I'm hoping for the best for him, whether he comes back here. I know he can play in this league. So, there's a lot of really good guys in that group, and you always hate this time of year. But, it's part of the business, and, we'll move forward.
Does it give this secondary more confidence just seeing how, some of the rookies played if Trey can't go week one or for however long he is out?
Of course. Anytime, rookies get out there to get on the field and be able to communicate with the vets and be able to make plays on the football, that's going to give you confidence going into the year. You just want to keep continuing to get better, keep continuing to try to push those young rookies. And really haven't even scratched the surface yet of the season. So it's a long year, and we just got to continue to get better every single day.
George, as a leader on the team, how do you try to address what the last 96 hours have been like?
I think Coach addressed it and Bean addressed it, and addressed everything that needed to be said. I think us as players in the locker room, we continue to, just continue to support the culture that's here, continue to, strive for what we believe in and strive for what we want to accomplish. And, the adversity happens throughout the season, and, it's the teams that handle it the right way that are going to come out on top. And this is something that we got to be able to handle the right way to move past and look forward to the Thursday night game against the Rams. I think we got the right group of guys. I know we got the right group of guys to do that in this locker room.
Jordan, how much is it knowing, being comfortable in knowing that this team has overcome periods of adversity and come out the better for it?
Yeah, like I said before, I know we got the right group of guys in this locker room to do so. Since 2017, there's the type of guys that Bean and Sean have brought into this locker room, just being able to handle adversity, being able to handle the ups and downs of of a game, of a season, whether that's on or off the field. You know, there's been things that's happened in the past we've been able to fight through, and, you know, this isn't going to be the last thing. You know, you like to think that this might be the last thing, but, you know, we played in this game long enough, and you guys have been in this business long enough to understand that there's probably going to be some other stumbles, maybe something happens throughout the year that we got to figure out. And so it's just part of the business and the nature that we're in, just being able to handle the adversity, being able to handle these moments and continue to move forward and continue to stay together and you know, hopefully it helps us be stronger as a football team.
How eager are you to get going?
I'm very eager.
All right, that's Jordan Poyer addressing the media in the locker room after practice. Heard him say there that he expects to be out there for the opener a week from this coming Thursday. Still in the red non-contact jersey for a second straight day. Practiced in that jersey on Saturday as well. Saturday.
Yep.
He's trying to leave the contract stuff where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody asked him if there's some drop-dead date where he'd like to get this straightened out. But he's trying to be the good soldier here, trying to not make waves going into the season, which I give him a lot of credit for because he obviously feels his value is greater than the sum he is being paid now and coming off a first-team all-pro season. I get it. So good on him for being a good soldier, but everybody's got a breaking point. I just wonder where that is and mm-hmm. whether it comes up again down the line here. That's the only thing I worry about.
Yeah. Does it come up this season? Does he get through this season? What does next season look like? It's a fun group, a fun team to be a part of this year. I know they're catching lightning in a bottle this year, hopefully,
yeah.
With what this team has built toward the last couple of seasons. And I know he would love to be a part of it and love to be a part of something that he really had a big hand in building and has been here since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean arrived in Buffalo. So I think there is some weight to that, but you're right. Every player does have that breaking point in terms of, I'm ready for the next contract. I'm worth more than I'm getting right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of a wait and see type thing to see what happens on that front. It doesn't look like it's going to impact him playing a week from Thursday. He wants to play. He knows what's at stake this season. I think he realizes this team is loaded to make a deep, deep, deep playoff run and hopefully get to the ultimate game and win it. There were some other players talking in the locker room. I was listening in to Kair Elam, and then I asked him a question as well, and I know we have Kair from the locker room conversation. So let's go to Kair Elam right now.
Less than 2 weeks away from the regular season, preseason's over. Just, you know, where's your confidence level going into the regular season?
Just preparing for, you know, game one, but also taking one day at a time where I'm locking in, I'm focusing on my technique fundamentals, focusing on all the small things, executing at a high level every single day, because just not taking a day for granted just because we have a game coming up.
How ready do you feel to step in week one right away?
Super duper prepared. I mean, like I said, I it took me a while to get down to the technique and fundamentals that my coach was like emphasizing and things like that in training camp. But like once I got it and became more confident, like it showed in my game of preseason, just making plays and being just executing the all cylinders. So like I said, my first interview, I'm gonna be ready when my name is called, and I just couldn't be more excited, you know.
How did you get those things down? Is it more practice reps? Is it more maybe looking at what you're doing in practice on film, you know, being able to see what you're doing right or wrong, that type of thing?
Yeah, it just took a lot of reps, honestly. Like, I would just say me coming from Florida, playing a lot of man, with no help and things like that, it was kind of harder for me to trust, like, where my help is, you know, how to bail and things like that. But it was like it came with a lot of reps. Like, it didn't come overnight, and like I was taking what my coach Butler was telling me to do, and I was doing it on my own, and I'm still doing it to this day. Like, I'm still just trying to just chop wood and just keep striving.
It was how reassuring is it, Kyrie, to have vets in your ear out on the field pre-snap? Like, it's kind of reassuring you what you're seeing is what you're seeing. You know?
Poyer, Jordan, and Micah are like alpha males, and they always communicate and reassuring me that, you know, if they motion, we're doing this. If they do that, we're doing this. So, like, it's very, 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 very helpful. Like, for me being a rookie, like, I just feel like them, what they're doing is just, like, mind-blowing for me because, like, I never experienced nothing like that before.
You've talked about your notebook. What are the biggest takeaways in your notebook from this summer?
My biggest takeaways from this summer? I just say just keep listening to my coaching and applying. Like I said, I wasn't perfect in training camp. But, you know, I always had that confidence and that hunger and that aggressive. But I was just – it was times where looking on film and listening to them, it was like I could do better. So just really just enhancing that, you know what I'm saying, and just keeping that same hunger I have, you know, to strive to be great.
Is there something really important that you wrote down that sticks out?
Don't take this opportunity for granted. Which I never did, but it was just like every day is a new day. Like, no matter what you did that last preseason game, this practice, like, you got to come and compete every single day. Because, like, you know, the receivers I go against are, you know, top notch. And, you know, if I know I can stick with them and make plays on them, it could be muscle memory in the game.
So Kyer Elam says he'll be super duper prepared.
Super duper.
For the season opener, which will be obviously his first NFL regular season game. The thing I wonder about most, Maddie, because we've seen them rotating.
I'm very interested to see what this looks like in the first week.
Do they just put Kyer Elam out there, or do they platoon him with Christian Benford, and do they kind of alternate series on one side with Dane Jackson on the other, assuming Tre'Davious White is not part of the equation? It's going to be very interesting to see how that works. The other thing, which is what I asked him, because if you have Dane on one side, you know he's straight. Mm-hmm. He's played in this defense for two seasons. He knows what he's doing. If you need to give help to Kyer and or Christian Benford on the other side, you've got people like Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde to get them lined up right, reassure them, hey, your help's here. You know, your leverage is here. Play it this way. Or if they change something, hey, this is what's coming. So they can kind of coach him through that so he's not like a lost puppy out there on the field. So that's encouraging for me because you can – if you had to help both guys
– No.
You know what I mean? If you got Benford on one side and Elam on the other, that's a lot of extra work for Jordan and Micah. With only one guy, I really think you can make it work. And that's what encourages me about, you know, the opener if Tre'Davious is not a part of the equation back there. I don't know if you feel differently, but they can succeed, I think. Not to mention the pass rush up front should hopefully help them as well. Don't have to cover as long kind of thing.
I mean, we have yet to see Tre'Davious White come onto the practice field and start practicing. So
we're running out of time.
It's looking like that's their only option. And you're right. They're running out of time. They've also said multiple times when Trey is ready to start practicing, we don't want to run him out there and then tell him he's going to play in a couple days. We want him to have the time he needs to get acclimated to playing again in this defense. So they've got a lot of veterans back there. Yeah. Micah, Jordan, and Taron Johnson is usually on the field a lot too.
Yeah. So reserve PUP, unfortunately, looking like more and more of a likelihood for Tre'Davious White, but we'll wait and see. Break time for us here when we come back. More on Kyer Elam and what's going on in that secondary. We'll also get some thoughts on the tweet sheet coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. The Buffalo Wing Festival will be back at Highmark Stadium over Labor Day weekend. Over 75 different styles of wings from 24 different eateries, local and from across the country, plus three stages with live music and contests. Something for the whole family. Tickets will be sold at the gate for $20. Parking is free, and kids under 8 get in for free. Learn more by visiting buffalowing.com. Should be an event. Bring your eating face with you. And an apron or a bib or something and a stack of napkins. I always need a ton of napkins. I will say the one thing that I learned when I first moved here, and I learned this from one of my college buddies, because I used to eat wings with both of my hands. He goes, what are you doing? He goes, one hand only and just work it with one hand. The flats are kind of hard, though, with one hand.
Yeah, I need to eat wings with two hands. My hands are also tiny. So,
But if you work at it, you can do it. You can do drums with one hand pretty easily. Flats might be a little bit of a different story because you got to kind of, there's a little more nooks and crannies there. But it was sage advice that I took, and I used a lot less napkins after that. Who knew? We wanted to get to the tweet sheet before we took a break here because we do have Eric Wood coming up in the second hour of our show. But now that the preseason is over, what did we learn about the Bills ahead of the regular season? Tweet sheet, as always, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And TJ leads us off with, we learned that our wide receiving core and depth is more legit than it's ever been. Same for the defensive line. The addition of Miller will be the difference in us making more splash plays this year. Look out for career years for Oliver, Edmonds, and even Milano. How's that one strike you?
I mean, the addition of Miller, he's going to add so much to the defensive line room. We heard from Greg Rousseau today in the locker room as well. I think we'll have sound on that later possibly. But he was asked of how Von Miller has really helped him now that he's been through an entire training camp with him. And he has so much to say about a veteran like that. And I was talking to Deion Dawkins too in the locker room, and I asked him, hey, has Von given you any advice of how to go up against Aaron Donald? And he was like, Von's giving me advice of how to be a better offensive lineman. I've lost so many reps against him during training camp. Just having him on our team in practices is making the whole team better. So I think he's going to bring that defensive line unit to a different level. And because of that, look out for Edmonds and Milano. The linebackers will definitely benefit off of a better defensive line this year.
Yeah, I agree with the opinion, wide receiving core and depth is more legit. Yes, because you have the emerging players in Davis and McKenzie. You have proven players in Diggs and Crowder. And then you have the wild card, who's Shakir, and then whoever the sixth receiver is, probably Jake Kumerow, with the way it stands right now, with final cuts coming down tomorrow. D-line, I've been trumpeting the depth of the D-line and how excited I am about it since about April. And not just because of Miller, because of the three giant humans that they signed in free agency to play alongside Ed Oliver inside. That's all very, very exciting as far as I'm concerned. Career year for Oliver, I think that could happen. Mm-hmm. Edmonds, conceivably, and Milano, I think it could happen because of those big guys up front. They're going to tie up linemen and not let them get to the second level, which allows Edmonds and Milano to roam free and just find the football, and should result in a lot of big numbers for them, whether it's tackles. Splash plays for the linebackers might be a little harder, but the DBs should have their hands on more balls for sure this year with more interceptions. Hopefully it all comes together and we see that. Let's take a break here, though, because when we return, we're going to be joined by our good friend Eric Wood, former Bills center and radio color analyst on the Bills radio network. We're going to check in with him and find out what he felt he learned about the Bills now that the preseason is over and we're getting ready for the regular season. Eric Wood coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, hour number two on a Monday. Chris Brown, Maddie Klab with you. And joined now by Bills radio color analyst Eric Wood, who, much like us, has taken in the preseason. And, boy, are we ready for regular season football. Well, aren't you, Eric? I mean, I know it's a little more, less than 10 days away, but I think we're all ready. We feel like we've been waiting forever.
Oh.
I know. I know it. I'm excited for it and excited to get out to LA. We're going to get out there Saturday, spend a little time with the family out there. But yeah, it's upon us. And those broadcasts are fun to call in the preseason. It's great to see all the guys competing, so many guys getting opportunities in the preseason. But those broadcasts sometimes feel like a baseball game where we're telling stories for part of the broadcast as opposed to just focusing on the action all the time. It'll be fun to get back to calling real games.
All right, Eric, what surprised you most about these preseason games? Was there a position group, a player, something that you had your eyes on that surprised you after three preseason games?
I wouldn't say I was surprised, but it was great to see Shakir back on punts returns and how comfortable he was back there. Like, not even a blip of a mistake back there. I thought in the first game maybe he was going a little too much laterally after catching the ball, which you can get away with in college. You cannot get away with that in the NFL, not even in preseason games. I thought he did a great job of getting north and south in the next two games. So that was great. And I thought, man, he just looked so smooth out there. You know, it was surprising to me at times to see how the tight end room shook out with O.J. Howard playing so many snaps in those preseason games, Quentin Morris being used in at times kind of in that Reggie Gilliam H-back fullback type role, moving around, and then Tommy Sweeney. We kind of knew what we were getting from him. That's the role he played there. You know, some of the guys on the offensive line played well. It was nice to see Quisenberry in there, get some action. Spencer Brown got some more action as the preseason went on. If you want to talk about a surprise, maybe Bobby Hart and how well he played through the preseason in games and then all the reports out of training camp, which may have been a little bit of the Aaron Cromer effect coming in and just getting a different set of techniques and some different philosophies that helped his game. On the defensive side of the football, defense played great. Some of those young linebackers, Bernard, extremely active. It was great to see the back end of that defense. You know, Jaquan Johnson is just been groomed for a number of years at safety. It was great to see him play at a high level all throughout the preseason. And, you know, if it gets to a point where he's got to play this year, I think a lot of Bills fans have tons of confidence in him. It was fun watching those two rookie cornerbacks out there and both kind of live up to the hype. And it'll be interesting to see how they shake out on the depth chart, but it won't be because either of them played bad. I thought both of them were a little handsy early on in the preseason, a little too much contact, which takes an adjustment coming from the college to the NFL. But, man, some great pass breakups. Benford last game in that goal line stand, how physical he was. And you have to be physical if you're going to play cornerback in Sean McDermott's defense. I explained during the broadcast that those corners oftentimes are the edge run support. And so when the ball gets bounced out to you, you're the final line of defense out there at corner. And so watching those guys tackle, there was a lot of bright spots from the preseason.
What do you think about this prospect, Eric? Because as we creep closer and closer to the season opener, it probably becomes less and less likely that Tre'Davious White is part of the equation since he still hasn't been cleared for practice. So with that in mind, obviously Kyrie Elam and or Christian Benford will be on the field on one side at the cornerback position with Dane Jackson on the other. Question is, could you foresee a platoon there between the two rookies through the course of a game, or would you expect them to say, let's just go with this guy and keep as many variables as minimal as possible?
That's a great question, and one I often pondered, because if the defensive coach staff, if Sean McDermott, if they're truly being truthful in the media when they say that those guys are just neck and neck in this competition for that spot, then maybe you do let them rotate early in the season and see who kind of shakes out and emerges as the top guy. Because let's say you play one or the other, there's some early struggles. Well, then do you go to the other guy? Do you sit there in the back of your mind and say, hey, maybe the other one could have played better? I think you could see that. Now, the only drawback, and I know this from playing experience, that oftentimes throughout a game, especially earlier in your career, throughout the game, you'll get more and more comfortable. It's not hitting the reset button each and every week, but you got to get the feel of the game again, and then you kind of get settled as the game goes on. Well, you'd hate to see one of them struggle a little bit early, then you replace them, and you're not letting either of them get comfortable, and I think that can happen if you do the platoon route.
In terms of the offensive line, you know, with how it's going to shake out this season, the new additions to the offensive line room, the veterans that were added, Aaron Cromer's effect, why do you have high hopes for the offensive line this season? We know they ended last season on a high note, but what do you think we can see out of this group in 2022?
Well, you get a lot of familiar faces back, and you get Spencer Brown and Quisenberry. That's kind of the only question mark. It appears that Quisenberry will be the starter at right tackle going into the season. Spencer Brown will likely play that sixth offensive lineman, that blocking tight end role that we often saw Brian Daboll use. I would assume you'll see some of that as well from Ken Dorsey, especially when they truly want to run the football and make it obvious or run some hard play action. So he'll be on the field. Just seems like kind of similar to Tre'Davious White, but a much different situation, that it's almost got to the point now is they're still being slow getting Spencer Brown back in there. Like, does he have the conditioning level to just start off and play a full game week one? And I don't know if that's the case. So it looks like Quisenberry will be the starter at right tackle, but the rest of that offensive line has played at a high level throughout their careers. Deion Dawkins is an excellent left tackle. Roger Saffold, one of the best run-blocking guards in the NFL during his time. Mitch Morse, we know what we have in our savvy veteran center. And then Ryan Bates emerged and played extremely well last year when given an opportunity, and I'm excited to see what he can do, focusing all of his attention to right guard. This is a guy last year who, in the first game he pops in, he goes in at right guard, and then immediately flips over to the left side. He was also playing backup center duties. So you're getting a lot of cross training there and maybe not able to master one spot. And so I'm excited to see what Ryan Bates can do, focusing all of his attention at right guard.
I realize a lot has probably been kept close to the vest, but after watching three preseason games worth of Ken Dorsey calling plays, have you drawn any conclusions from his play calling as to what to anticipate going forward?
My biggest conclusion would be that they kept it very similar to Brian Daboll, so they're not giving away any secrets in the preseason, and that's what I expected. You're not going to – any new wrinkles, you want to hold those at least for L.A., and maybe everybody will see it on full display come the L.A. game, but most of that's held to the vest. There's some little nuances in the run game that looks like it's either a Ken Dorsey or maybe an Aaron Cromer effect, some of that mid-zone to where – it's not quite inside zone. It's not quite outside zone. The Bills were extremely effective running that throughout the preseason. But you're seeing a lot of the pin and pull schemes where one guy will block down and the offensive line will pull out and get out in space. And with that, as athletic as this offensive line is, we saw those under Brian Daboll, and we're going to continue to see them because that's the strength of this offensive line. And as I've talked to Aaron Cromer, he just gushes about how this is by far the most athletic offensive line he's ever been around. And you could just do so many fun things when you have five guys that can all get out and run.
Eric, the roster is at 73 right now. They've got to be down to 53 tomorrow at 4 o'clock. So is there a position group or a couple players that you're looking at with, you know, are these guys going to make the roster? I'm interested to see how this position group shakes out. A lot of people talked about Isaiah Hodgins in the preseason based on what he was able to do, probably competing for a spot with Jake Kumerow. So is there anyone in particular that you're kind of eyeing as cuts get made tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. At receiver, you mentioned Isaiah Hodgins. I think that's an interesting one to look at. And when you look at him versus maybe a Jake Kumerow, can you keep both of them? If you do, you probably eliminate one of your young linebackers, a Baylen Specter maybe. Maybe that's the competition there. At tight end, what you do with Quentin Morris and Tommy Sweeney, do you keep them both? It's going to be interesting to see how those in particular shake out. But when you have a roster with so much talent, so many returning starters, there's not a ton of jobs up for grabs. We know how serious this Bills staff takes special teams. So a Tywan Jones, a Tyler Medicavich, you know, when where those other guys shake out special teams wise, in particular with an Isaiah Hodgins, who's never proven in a game that he could be effective on special teams, but he very well could be. We just don't know that at this point. They've gotten the pleasure of seeing those guys in practice and all the reps there. From the games, we didn't get a huge sample size either. And then in the last game, you got to evaluate some in the punt game. But when you have Matt Barkley punting, and valiant effort by him not making that a laughing stock, getting back there and punting and being effective, it's not great film to evaluate. So I think a lot of it comes down to the special teams roles. And if Isaiah Hodgins, if they feel like he can be reliable on game day to go and cover and block, block on the returns and cover kicks, then I think you could see him make this team, because it was evident to me in the last game. You know, I think he had three catches for 13 yards, but that's going against the Panthers starters. You're getting the ball out of your hands quick, you know, with the backup offensive line against their starting defensive line. But it was interesting to me. That's Isaiah Hodgins is who those quarterbacks were looking to first. Like, in a matchup of we got some of our reserve against one of the best secondaries in football. They were looking his way, which shows me kind of the respect and reputation he has in that locker room.
Right. Had a couple of big fourth down conversions on back-to-back series in that game where he did have to get physical on contested catch situations. So, Eric, now that the preseason is over, you've kind of witnessed this team up close and personal. Have you formulated any opinions? Like, I'm sure you had questions going in. You've observed this team now for the better part of a month. What do you come out of it with in terms of a projection about maybe a side of the ball or a position group? Is there anything that you've kind of formulated in your head in terms of an opinion that you have now after witnessing what you've witnessed?
Well, we got such a small sample size of the starters in the preseason, but I was really encouraged with the running backs in that run game. And I think, you know, I think you'll see more run and play action. We heard a lot about that through the season last year from Sean McDermott. I think Sean McDermott, in hiring Ken Dorsey, I'm sure there was an understanding there that they want to be physical on the offensive side of the football too. And I was really encouraged by the play of Singletary, Moss, James Cook, and his explosiveness. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about. This is a passing team. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, one of the best receiving corps. Look, they're going to air it out, but you want to have an effective run game, and I think they can have that. And those running backs looked excellent. I think Zach Moss has got a little bit of pop in his wheels again after coming off an injury last year and didn't look like quite the same player as we saw in year one from him. But him and Singletary look great. We obviously know that James Cook has that explosion. We got to see it in a game now. But from the run game, I was excited to see that. And then I'm excited to see this Bills pass rush. I'm excited to see Von Miller, Greg Rousseau, who, when I've talked to the coaches, they are so excited about Greg Rousseau and what he can be in year two for this team. Daquan Jones, kind of a sneaky candidate to be a pass rushing threat on the interior. Obviously, Ed Oliver really came on strong in the second half of the season last year. And, you know, if we're going to play that first game in a number of weeks without Tre'Davious White to start the season, if that's the case, the best friend of those young cornerbacks will be that pass rush, and I'm excited to see them under the lights.
With the run game and more play action potentially this season, how do you think that can help a fifth-year quarterback in Josh Allen who's still looking to improve in a lot of different ways? He talked about the yards after catch, throwing guys open early on in OTAs when he came back to Buffalo. So how do you think an improved play of the running backs and maybe some more play action thrown in there can help this guy maybe even reach newer heights this season?
Yeah, and it became really popular. The Bills did it against Kansas City, lead those safeties back, dare them to run the football. And at times, teams were doing that to the Bills last year because the passing attack is so prolific. But if you're able to run the ball effectively, one of those safeties has got to get involved in the run game, which can open you up for bigger plays down the field. If you get a better run game with your running backs, then you have to rely on Josh Allen less in crucial situations to run the football himself. That could potentially keep him healthier long term. Looking at that, Josh is such a weapon using his legs. You don't want to take that away from him completely, but as he progresses throughout his career, you'd like to see him run the ball less and less and take less shots. That being said, a run game, a solid play action game helps out with that.
Last one I've got for you, Eric. It seems as though down the stretch here that the defensive staff was kind of pitting Nick McLeod and Cam Lewis up against one another for potentially the last corner spot. We know that both of them have also doubled at the safety spot at some point in the preseason. And Cam does have the added element of being able to play outside at corner or in the slot. He got, you know, a nose injury in the game when his chin strap failed him, had to come out early. But what are your thoughts on those two being pitted against one another potentially for the last corner spot on the roster if Tre'Davious isn't ready?
Yeah, I think that's a real battle back there. And it was interesting them working Cam Lewis in at safety in those last two preseason games. You know, he showed before that he can play corner in this league. If he's able to play safety as well, that position flexibility on the back end of the defense, you know, this staff has just proven that they love that. They love a Saran Neal who can do both and then play special teams. And so that being said, it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I don't know that either of them completely separated themselves from each other throughout the preseason. That's why we're sitting here having this conversation about them. But those are two guys. You know, a Cam Lewis is intriguing to me because he's a guy with some serious quickness. And I've just gotten to see a smaller sample size from Nick McLeod, but Cam Lewis has got a lot of quickness, a lot of competitiveness. He's tough. You know, he hits the dude so hard his chin strap breaks and his nose may have broken with it or whatever the injury was, the final call on his nose, but he's a tough dude. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can play for this Bills team, and he's proven in the past.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for the time. We'll see what this roster looks like the next time we talk to you. It'll be all said and done and ready to go for week one.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And I think we're going to have some roster gymnastics again over yep. the next few days. And so for all those Bills fans listening in, maybe no harsh reactions. If your favorite player is let go, he may be sitting in the parking lot and coming right back. So it's going to be interesting to see how they manipulate this roster and keep all the guys they want to. But, man, what a fun time to be a Bills fan with this roster they got set.
Thanks again, Eric. We'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Eric Wood joining us here on One Bills Live, giving us his thoughts on the preseason and what he anticipates for the regular season. And he's right. There will be roster gymnastics. You still have Marquez Stevenson and his situation coming off of foot surgery. You don't want to IR him now and cost him the entire season. But what you have to do in order to put him on IR after the regular season starts is you have to give him a roster spot. So that means he, much like last year, because what they did last year was he had a foot injury also mm-hmm. that he suffered in the preseason. They put him on the active roster for a day, which is required. Then they put him on IR. Do you remember what they did? They cut Reed Ferguson.
Yep.
And people were like, what are they doing? It's like, hold on. Everybody stay calm.
It's going to be okay.
It's a little roster juggling to get through the regulations that are required. So the next day, they put Marquez Stevenson on IR, and he's not lost for the whole season when you do it after the roster is set. And then they re-sign Reed Ferguson, and all is right with the world. They may have to do that very same thing with Marquez Stevenson. And, you know, as we said today, Quinton Morris leaves practice early today with an apparent injury. We don't know what it is. We don't know the severity of it. But if it's even going to keep him out of action for a little bit
of
time.
OJ Howard was on the bike for 2 days.
Well, yeah, and OJ Howard hasn't done much either. So you may have to carry four tight ends no matter what because of the injury situation, and that may push another player off the roster. Like Eric was even saying, you know, maybe your sixth linebacker gets pushed off the active roster like a Baylen Specter or at some other position. With Tre'Davious White's situation, he looks like he is on a collision course with a reserve PUP designation, which would make him ineligible for the first four games of the season, but would also open up another opportunity to carry another corner because if he's on reserve PUP, he doesn't take up a roster mm-hmm. spot. So it's all of that kind of juggling that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to have to undertake in the next 24 to 36 hours, let alone establish a practice squad after that. So, yeah, they're going to be jumping through some hoops, ducking under some limbo bars to kind of get this roster set where they need it to, and it probably won't be completely set tomorrow at 4 p.m. It'll be at 53, but it's likely to change in some way, shape, or form.
And they may be catching up on having some of these conversations about the 53 because the last several days the conversations were involving what do we do with the punter. That took up a lot of their time,
yeah.
Including up until and after the last preseason game. So who knows what conversations are going on right now behind closed doors of with where's the roster at? Are we still evaluating anybody? What do we need to look at here? Who do we need to cut here? You know, you never know what these next 2 days look like
yeah.
with the type of conversations that they're having, knowing what they had to deal with last week and a couple days ago.
You know, and now that I'm thinking about that whole thing last year with Marquez Stevenson, I'm thinking this year your extra spot is the punter position, which is currently unfilled. So do you talk to a free agent punter and say, hey, we're interested, we want to sign you, but we're going to wait until after we set the roster, and then we'll move this player, maybe Stevenson, from the active roster to IR, then we'll have the open spot to sign you to the roster, and off we go. We just need you to hold your water. We'll sign you on Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Something like that could very well happen, because I know there's some people out there going, why don't we have a punter yet? It'll happen in due time. They're just waiting to see who else is clipped around the league, in addition to some that have already been reported. And then you might have some roster juggling that you have to do where it might behoove the Bills to wait just one more day and then sign a punter on Wednesday when they may have an extra spot because of a roster designation changing from active roster to IR or something else. So that may go that way. Mm-hmm. We'll have to just wait and see.
Yeah, and after the roster is cut down to 53, this week is a little bit different with the practice schedule. We are less than 2 weeks away from that week one game, but the Bills practice today. They'll practice tomorrow, and then they'll get Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off. So some of the guys are probably going to head out of town. I talked to Dane Jackson. He's going to go catch a Pitt football game because they play on Thursday night to start their season, and then the guys will come back a little bit earlier and start practice on Saturday. It'll be a weird week next week as well as they prepare for a Thursday opener.
Yeah. Let's get back to the tweet sheet here quick before we take a break. As we were asking you today, you know, you saw the whole preseason front to back. Now that it's over, what did we learn about the Bills ahead of the regular season? Jack says, we learned they're still humble and hungry. It doesn't seem as though they're distracted by the preseason power rankings or the hype. They're focused on the long season ahead with the goal of taking it one at a time and pursuing a championship. Is there any update on Morris Hurd at practice today? There is not. Because we don't have access to Coach McDermott today. We may have access to him or General Manager Brandon Bean at some point tomorrow, and we may get an update there, but more than likely, probably not something until midweek that's definitive. So we are going to have to wait.
But we'll see with what the roster looks like.
Well, right, that too. Let's not forget that. But, yeah, I mean, if his injury is – going to keep him out of practice for mm-hmm. any length of time, and we're talking like just 3 or 4 days, you almost have to keep four tight ends then.
Mm-hmm.
So you have enough to go into the season opener with. So that's that could potentially change the dynamics of the intentions of the coaching staff and the personnel department as to who they were going to keep and where. That's what makes it interesting.
You talk about humble and hungry. The NFL Top 100 came out, and Josh Allen was number 13 on the list, which I'm sure a lot of fans did not expect, at least a top 10. He was 10 last year in the NFL Top 100, dropped three spots, number 13. A little bit interesting, but I saw a lot of players post about it. You know, keep sleeping is what a lot of people said, a lot of emojis about, you know, why is this guy number 13? He's way better than number 13, deserves to be in the top 10. So, yeah, humble and hungry approach.
All I know is, I mean, I tweeted this today. I was thanking the NFL Top 100 for motivating Josh Allen to completely wreck the league again this year. If he didn't have any internal motivation, which he usually has plenty of,
mm-hmm.
he's got even more now. So thanks, NFL Top 100, for doing that. Ranking him 13th. It's ridiculous.
ESPN had him at number 5, so
that's
good job,
that's
ESPN.
Better.
But
that's significantly better. I mean, you don't even have him in the top 10. You're like, what the hell are you doing? Like, have you watched football? Did you watch the Patriots playoff game? I mean, I don't know if a quarterback has had back-to-back playoff games that productive, that efficient, ever. I mean, it was almost two perfect games by a quarterback in the playoffs against top-flight competition. So I don't know what else you need to do to convince people that, you know, you're good. Maybe Tom Brady's behind it. I'd be happy to blame him, especially the way he treated Josh at the match championship. That still bothers me with these little side jokes. Who the hell? Just get the hell out of here with that. I can't. Oh my God.
Go take another vacation.
Can't stand Brady. Well, speaking of which, did you see the video when he was talking about how he's got a lot of stuff to handle at age 45?
Got a lot of stuff to have.
Did you see his face?
Got a lot of stuff.
A lot was made on social media about all of a sudden his chin looked half the
size. I was looking at him and I was like, he looks more and more like a robot or like a fake human every single time we see him.
He's always, I mean, he's got a defined jawline, but he's always had like a full face. And I know he's lost weight as he's gotten older and, you know, he's a little more drawn in his face.
And I know he's super careful about what he puts in his body and how he takes care of his body. I don't know if that's why he looks way younger than 45 years old.
But he looked gaunt. Like, I was like, what? Was he sick? I looked at his face and I said, did he get work done? Like, what? I don't know what was going on, basically, from his cheekbones down to his chin. Because he didn't even look like the same person.
Very defined.
I mean, it was like something right out of the Michael Jackson days when he was getting all that work done. I was like, what's going on there? More was made of that on social media than him saying I'm 45 years old and there's mm-hmm. a lot of bleep going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at, I was like, what are they talking about? So I went and looked at the video. I was like, holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even look like him. I don't know what's going on. Something's happening. I don't know if he got work done in the Bahamas or he was somewhere else. People were talking about the Masked Singer for the longest time. Well, if he was on that show, he must have had the mask on too long because it misshaped his face. I don't know what the heck's going on there.
I don't know.
Something, I'm telling you, something's not right with his head. There's something that got messed up with his chin there. I don't know if he got a botched surgery. I don't know what it is, but he looks completely different from basically the bottom of his nose to the bottom of his chin. Something is different there structurally. I don't know what's going on, but it didn't look right. And I don't think it was just a bad day. Something happened there. We're going to find it out.
It did look different.
We'll put TMZ's probably on it for sure. So I guess we'll count on them to unearth whatever the heck it was. We got to take a break here. We'll finish up with some thoughts on the tweet sheet. And we'll play a little NFL True False next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you. Got some more post-practice locker room comments to pass along your way. This is from veteran center Mitch Morse. So let's see what he had to say about basically the preseason coming to the close and gearing up for the regular season opener.
It's just being a veteran on this team and being one of the leaders in this locker room, just what have the past couple of days been like, and just how do you, as one of those leaders, kind of get everybody refocused and, I guess just that really.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think everyone would answer that differently in the locker room. For me, there's so many unknowns that, and I know there's a bunch of cliche answers you probably have already heard, but it's the truth, you know what I mean? You try not to have the court of a public opinion affect yourself, but it's hard not to, you know what I mean? And it's just one of those things that in the end, it was a hard decision for the organization to make. I think they made the one that made the most sense. As a guy in the locker room, it's tough. You know, some guys have kids, and it makes you think of both situations. I think it was one of those great tests as a group to see where we could go from mentally. You know, it was right before a game. I thought the guys were able to compartmentalize it, who were playing, played effectively, really put some good stuff out there. It definitely caused some conversations in the locker room, I think healthy ones between guys. And, it's just one of those things that it's incredibly unfortunate for both parties. And I just hope at the end that both parties find some peace in this and it sorts itself out.
You mentioned how some guys have kids. Mm-hmm. You yourself, you do.
Yeah.
For you personally, just, you know, how challenging has this whole situation been to be around this?
Yeah, it's a good question. You definitely has that shock at first. You have that guttural reaction, and then you kind of take a step back, kind of think of the situation itself. I don't think there's a right answer for guys to, you know, it's conflicting. In the end, I do think they made the right decision. And as unfortunate as it might be for Matt, he's got other stuff to deal with. And this team, you know, time marches on, and that's kind of what we're doing right now. Yeah, that's a good point. Adversity finds itself in a locker room throughout the season. We've talked about this a little bit off air. It also finds itself, you know, all phases and all ways. And it's always unfortunate, and especially this situation. It's just, it's such a touchy subject, and you have so many thoughts. There's no right answer, and I think you ask 53 opinions, more than that in this locker room, someone's going to give you a different opinion. And that's why you sympathize for people who have to answer, like, you know, coach goes up there right after this, and, you know, he doesn't have the right answer because it just for some people, they don't think he has the right answer, but that's the answer he's got. And you got to sympathize for that. And I think they've handled it admirably because I don't envy those situations. And that's why I'm the player and they're the guys who have to make those decisions. So a lot of kudos for them making the decision that they thought was right. And I think it was the right one. And you go from there.
What was Sean's message throughout this whole thing to you guys?
First of all, it was just, you know, I think he was kind of, you know, I don't think he slept very much, Coach. He's going through the same thoughts we all are in regards to being a family man. He wants to win football games, but he also, there's something higher. There's a higher power to that, which is just, you know, humanity, how he handles himself and how he wants his team to handle himself and how he wants everyone to do stuff. And, you know, it's just, it really is such a trying time. And I wish there was, like, you know, every, like, a, you know, when the fire alarms pull at school, there's a code you follow. Everyone goes here to here and here, and they're kind of writing the book on it right now. And it's unfortunate, but at the same time, it's I think they handled it as well as they could.
What have you learned about Sean in these circumstances?
I think he puts the fact that he's a football coach. I mean, he wants what's best for the team, but he also wants to make decisions that I think he'd want for his kids. And he puts himself as a father first and kind of goes from there. And, you know, it's like I said, it's not something I envy because it's such a decision. You know, not only, you know, do you not have all the facts because you're not the one doing the investigation, right? But you're putting both, you know, both parties have tremendous stakes. You know, their lives are in hand. So you have to make a decision that's best for the team, which is what his job is. And I think for also for the city of Buffalo, the organization, all that stuff. So, like I've said 1,000 times, I don't envy that decision. But I think he made a decision promptly, both of them, in a way that we can kind of take the next step forward as a team to get ready for the season.
Thanks for him being on the roster. How important is it to the team to put this in the past and focus on this
season? Yeah, absolutely. I think now at this point we have to play ball. We know what's coming up. We don't want to completely compartmentalize it because there's a lot of lessons learned here. But we do have a game coming up in, you know, 12 or something, you know, less than that, you know, 10 days. So we got to take that step as a team to focus on that and learn the lessons we can and go from there.
And that's why the media usually huddles around Mitch Morse's locker when they want to gauge the temperature of a locker room or the mood of a locker room, because Mitch kind of states it pretty eloquently. As you heard him getting walked through a series of questions about what things were like for this team for the better part of the last 72 to 96 hours when the Matt Araiza stuff first broke, the decision-making that followed, and then the ultimate decision that was made over the weekend to release him. Not easy for a team to go through, but Deion Dawkins, who spoke later after practice today, he pretty much assured the media, it's over. It's behind us. It's done. We're on to the next thing. And I think with a locker room that's got its fair share of veterans and fair number of players that have been here almost for the duration of the McDermott tenure, that it will, the page will be turned rather quickly.
Yeah, they have no choice but to turn the page and focus on what's ahead. I mean, this is territory that a lot of them have never been in, and hopefully will never have to be in again. You're walking into your final preseason game, and news is breaking, and you're looking at your phone, you're hearing from other people about a player on the team who has rape allegations against them, and you're wondering how to go through a final preseason game and then proceed on with practices. This was something that they all had to figure out, okay, how do we work through this as a team? How do we come together? What are the coaches going to do? What is Brandon Bean going to do? So I'm sure the last couple days also for them to be in that locker room was a little bit tough. But hopefully something like this, Mitch Morse said there were lessons learned, and hopefully they can be better because of this or come together because of something like this.
Let's shift gears here, and we'll go to do a little NFL True-False presented by Patron Tequila, the official tequila of the Buffalo Bills. And we lead off with NFL True-False number one. The 49ers are making a mistake at quarterback by going with Trey Lance over Jimmy Garoppolo. True or false?
I don't know if I'm sold on Trey Lance yet. I think Jimmy G can still do something for you. But I don't know if I would call it a mistake. Maybe premature.
So the
move.
Language is strong. For
yes.
You. All right. So you're going to say false?
I'm going to say false.
Yeah. I think what the 49ers are doing here is they're playing the long game. They're investing in Trey Lance. And when you invest in a young quarterback like this, you got to be willing to accept some growing pains. And
yeah.
I think we saw that through the course of the preseason. So as long as you're committed to living through the ups and the downs, I don't think it's a mistake either. I will say false, too. They've seen Jimmy Garoppolo. They know what he is. And there was a weird report like 2 or 3 weeks ago that came out basically saying that Jimmy G goes off the grid and you can't get a hold of him. Like, there have been times where the 49ers have had to literally go to his house, knock on the door, and ask, are you still alive?
Oh,
like, weird, like the quarterback of your team doing that. That's bizarre.
Not good.
So I don't think that that did him any favors either as far as being a leader on your football team, you know, somebody to lead the group. And I think they believe the upside is significantly higher with Lance. So I think they're willing to go through some of the growing pains that I think are inevitably going to happen for him, because he does not look like Josh did in his second year through the course of the preseason. NFL true false number two, Chargers are the most likely team who missed the playoffs in 2021 to make it in 2022.
I'd be right there at the Chargers and Colts. But I'm going to say true on this one. I think the Chargers have a really great roster. We know Justin Herbert. We know what he can offer. In terms of how their roster looks like this season, they stacked up their defense. So, yeah.
All right, so you're going to go with Chargers. The only thing that gives me pause with this is the division they play in.
True.
I believe they will make the playoffs. I think they are good enough to finally turn the corner and get there. They have been an organization that has a ton of injuries almost every year. We haven't seen that bite them too badly in the preseason, so that's encouraging. But it's hard for me to say the most likely team because, and you already mentioned them, the Colts to me are in a down division. I think the Jaguars will be better, but they're going to be lucky to win six games. I think Houston's going to be lucky to win six games. And I think Tennessee takes a step back with some of their free agent departures, most notably A.J. Brown via trade and Julio Jones, who they released. So because of that, I'm going to say the Colts are the most likely team that missed last year to make it this year. So I will say false for this one, even though I do think they're good enough, even in that powerhouse division, to reach the postseason. All right, that's NFL True False. Presented by Patron Tequila. We will take a break and be back to close things up with some final thoughts on the tweet sheet here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Maddie. So on the Bills Instagram page over the weekend, they ran a video that they stationed a camera in the Bills locker room and essentially had them try to make a trick shot straight out of Dude Perfect, where they're bouncing ping pong balls off of frying pans and pots and everything to get it into a red Solo cup. And the most interesting thing for me was how adamant Josh was to get at least one. And he even said that. He's like, I got to get at least one. You don't know how badly I need to get one of these in. And eventually he did. So, too, did Matt Barkley. But you can see all the ping pong balls. Our MSU viewers can see all the ping pong balls on the floor.
All over the floor.
To realize how many there were. Josh had a couple of shots off the rim, and he, like, couldn't believe he just missed. He fell off the chair and whatever. Eventually, he gets one in, celebrates. Matt gets one in, celebrates. I asked Josh in the locker room today, how many ping pong balls do you think you threw before you got that one in? And he said, about 100.
Oh, my gosh.
Then I asked Matt Barkley how many he threw. He said, 2. which is totally false. Totally
liar,
false.
Liar, liar, Matt Barkley.
But then he said, no, he goes, I don't know if it was 100. He said he thinks he threw less than 100, but he kind of went to school on Josh's tosses because they knew they had to hit the bottom left corner of one of the pans to get it to bounce
to
right.
Figure it out.
I asked him if he put any English on the ball to get it to spin a little. He's like, no, I don't think I had to do that. But they were locked in, man. It was impressive. The fortitude and the persistence.
We hear about how competitive that room is, so I am not surprised that Josh sat there and threw 100 balls.
Yeah. I wish I had that kind of time. I don't think any of us
do. Me too.
We got to go, but we'll be back here tomorrow at 1. Steve will be back in that chair. Maddie, thanks for helping us out today. We will catch up with you later in the week. We'll see you tomorrow at 1.